and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode 149, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask of Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Our pocket encyclopedia of comics, Tony Esmond.
Hiya. Oh, yeah.
And that was very sensible, Tony. Well done. Well done. I'm very proud of you.
People don't say hi yet enough, do they?
No. I think we should bring it back.
Yeah, it's more sort of Timmy Mallett type of era.
We're basically going to be the 90s era of podcasts, aren't we? We're
just brilliant. Bring,
yeah, amazing.
And I was born in the 90s.
You were born in the 90s? What, the 1890s?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Oh.
Look, the way I've been bullied before we started this show, I think it's only fair. Yes, it's not just us, though. We've also got a guest on, and also joining us this week. He's a comic book designer and letterer whose list of indie comics credits is epically long, judging from his website, and includes titles such as The Kill Screen, Afterlife Inc., Bubbles 07, Clockwork Watch, The Pride, Dead Roots, Sergeant Steel, Lord knows however many more. Yes, it's our pleasure to welcome Mike Stock to the show. Hello, Mike.
Hiya.
It's all practice with you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Here we go. I'm going to do that, boys.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us this week, Mike.
My pleasure.
Yes. Long time coming.
Yep. Long time coming. And we've got a few questions this week, And you'll find out why when we talk about the topic in a minute. But I'll tell you what I don't need to question, Tony. Do you know what that is?
Oh, fuck me. Christ.
I don't need to question how much fun I had at the Comic Mart.
We did have fun.
Treat.
You can also have fun on Comic House.
Oh, yeah, Comic House as well, yeah. You can go to comichouse.com, right? If you could make it to the Comic Mart, then there's another place that you can get your fix of independent comics and beyond, and that's comichouse.com. It's the place to go. On the website, you'll find a huge library of comics that you can order, like the hard copies and all sorts, and the money will go to the creators as well. Comic House only take a little bit off the top, skimming off the top a little bit.
But Mafia.
Yeah, like the Mafia. Yeah, they are. You know, they are getting bigger and bigger all the time. So they're essentially like the Comics Mafia that you can trust. But they also have a Comic House app, which is amazing. It's available now and it's updating all the time. Dan, do you know what they've got on at the moment?
Yeah, I've got some of the new titles here. The Ritual, Project Luna 1947. The latest issue of the Pull List with Captain Cosmic on the front, Randy Clift. Straight Ink. This week's Reading Club book, which is Retropunk. Nazi Werewolf Zombie Inferno. That looks great.
Hang on, is that the title? Nazi Werewolf Zombie Inferno?
Just a thing, Dan's legs.
Yeah. Riddler's Fair.
That's like a porn way I saw.
And finally, Hollow. So.
like my life.
So yeah, there's a selection of titles we've had on comichouse.com.
Yes, and just like Tony's life, there's an amazing amount of fun within. So if you go to comichouse.com, you can find out more about the Comic House app, which is available now for only £3 a month. You get access to all the digital comics on their database, which is amazing, and there's loads, and we talk about them all the time because we actually genuinely use it. You know,
this we used it today.
Yes. Yeah. So it's brilliant and we love them. And thank you for sponsoring the show, guys. Comichouse.com. So there you go. But as I was saying before, a sponsorship ad just dropped in from out of nowhere.
Yeah, you're such a pro.
I try.
How much
I try.
Of that was scripted? Was it even Tony getting it wrong? It was scripted as well.
What's a script?
My life isn't run by script. Stop.
No, man.
Nice.
Yeah. Is a little bit, to be fair.
Basically, your life is basically curb your enthusiasm mixed with only fools and horses. That's what your life is.
Usually it's the in-betweeners crossed with Lebowski, which I kind of go with. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
The in-betweeners being for, like, teens.
Really?
How did that work with you?
I'm into the teens. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Right, okay. Oh, no. Let's start this now. So, as I was saying, we went to the London Comic Mart.
We did.
Sunday, didn't we?
You were a virgin at it.
I know. I popped my Comic Mart cherry.
Yeah.
And I loved every minute of it.
It was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We had a great time at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it
was.
How was the smell? Because you did mention that something.
Yeah, at moments it was a bit strong. It was, though, wasn't it? At moments in the main hall, I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah.
I feel a bit like I'm going to be sick. But other than that, it was all right.
Yeah.
I don't recall there being a smell when I went up.
I think it's just the heat of the room and certain people's lack of deodorant care, I think.
Is this in like a hotel lobbies type back room?
Yeah. Yeah, like an old hotel ballroom sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went up for Andy's birthday a couple of years ago.
Oh, I think I saw you there. I saw Andy at that. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I think I missed you by a few minutes, but I came for the afternoon shift and we ended up in a pub. But so,
yeah,
it is the sort of thing you could do shifts in as well, because like this, you could just be in there for hours. You know, it was fantastic.
I was like the kid outside the pub where your dad gives you crisps and makes you look after the car. I just sort of had to sit with a big pile of everyone's suitcases.
Well, you got in. You were one of those bling bling sort of crowd, weren't you? That paid
£5.
£5 to get in, get in early.
So I roll.
You're proper.
Isn't it the same old stock all the time, though?
No, it's different. That is different. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, to be fair, I think I got like literally a bag that was almost too heavy to carry home for about 30 quid.
Awesome. You had done all your shopping by the time I arrived, hadn't you?
Yeah.
And then, he showed me around and just, I mean, put it this way, folks, it is just two rooms just full of long boxes with back issues from of all eras and old magazines. You've got the abundance of bootleg DVDs was quite astounding.
Yeah, people who are unaware of the fact that YouTube exists and buy bootleg DVDs.
Yeah.
Was there someone flogging the old Roger Corman Fantastic Four film?
I bet there was. Yeah, there was. Yeah.
There was a few weird DVDs when I was there as well.
Yeah.
There was someone that there was. I pointed out one to you. I can't remember if it was you, Vince, or Jason, but it was basically a load of DVDs that were described in a little section as racist cartoons.
Oh God!
He's got fun about it.
Yeah, you know, from like the 40s, 50s, and 60s cartoons that were like you couldn't show now.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, a bit like that. There was a little
the whole section.
Yeah. And there was a whole row of 1970s UK slap and tickle comedies.
Oh my God!
Fucking hell!
There's like Come Play with Me and Eskimo Nell and all these sort of what probably would have been shown in the Windmill Theatre cinema in Soho for a while, which you might have seen a couple of nipples in at the most, you know, is that sort of thing.
I think it says a lot about us that you took notice of that, and the only DVD I picked up was the Defenders of the Earth omnibus.
Well, all tastes to cater for.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, you got a pile of Eagles and all sorts, didn't you?
Yeah. Do you know what's funny? It was quite hard to find like some of the back issue sort of Eagles and stuff, those weekly comics. They were usually sort of tucked underneath the tables, so you had to keep your eye out for them, and I found like a little gold mine, and I just thought, oh brilliant, you know, these are Eagles from 1988, so I picked up a load, got them cheap as chips, came home and already had them.
Oh no.
How's the Stormforce kind of omnibus coming together?
I tell you what, I've almost got all of 1987. It was when
it's not alike. It's good.
It was when I opened my spreadsheet that that my girlfriend Jo looked at me and went, "Oh my God, you've got a spreadsheet!"
Oh fuck no!
I bet probably your luck was in after that, wasn't it?
Yeah, of course, naturally. There's nothing that is more sexual than a spreadsheet.
Gets the lady going than a comic spreadsheet.
Comic spreadsheet.
Got a bit of conditional formatting in there, probably.
Oh yeah. I had it in date order. Yeah, we just need a bit of sexy music behind this now. But to answer your question, Dan, it's coming along nicely.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm basically just putting together this book just for myself, which I'm scanning in, and like I just want a collection that I can just have on my shelf and read. You know, but it's
like a normal book.
Like a normal book.
What's that?
Yes, it is going to be like a normal book, Mike. Yes, essentially.
Yeah, cool.
Just checking.
Yeah. You kind of caught out.
White clean pages.
Oh.
If you want a kind of collection of a comic and they haven't collected it, you're kind of like, oh, well, fuck. What am I going to do?
And there's quite, I think, there's especially a lot of those when it comes to those older UK comics, isn't there, really?
Yeah. There's very little in reprint. Yeah.
I wanted to read all those, the Star Blazer ones, you know, the small little A5 or less than.
Yeah, A5. They had a load of them there.
Oh, okay, because you can't fucking find that they haven't reprinted them in one spot.
Yeah. They haven't. No. Yeah. There's some Grant Morrison writing in them, you know?
Yeah.
He wrote something.
There's a couple of stories really stick out in my mind that I remember reading them.
Great covers as well. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a great day, though, because I rarely, especially these days, go to comic sort of event, and it's just to sort of have a browse or shop. You know, normally we're doing either something for the podcast or we've got a table, and yeah. you're constantly thinking about that. Even
I've
when
got to go to the next one. I'm really fucked off that I didn't couldn't go. But
yeah,
it's a bit of a trek. The next one's 1st of July.
It was a little bit of a trek, but I caught the bus, which Tony keeps laughing about. The fact that I caught mega the bus up. It wasn't the mega bus.
You had a poo on the bus. You told me.
No, oh, I didn't.
No one wants that.
No one on that bus wants that. Yeah. No, but it was cheap as chips though.
Got to go though.
So you know, I met Tony and he looked after all my shopping while I went in for another round. So
you got your award and Sarah Harris brought your award along.
No,
she presented it to you.
Not my award. Our award. Yeah. Yes. Big props to Sarah Harris for bringing along our Yancey Street Award.
Oh, and get all the way from Scotland for us, to be fair.
Yeah.
She is too good to you.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
She really is.
Everyone is, really. We don't deserve it.
And then Simon Russell, we turned up, didn't we? We had a chat with him before we went and worked.
Nice to meet him finally.
Yeah. Jason Gunn turned up. He did quite a lot of shopping. Then he and I stayed in the pub till about 9:30.
Yeah.
That became quite a late one. And we met some Italian comic artists and a filmmaker. It was one of those ones where we basically sat outside the pub and people kept arriving and chatting to us. And then...
David Hathaway Price. I bumped into him on the shop floor.
Oh, I didn't see him. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Very nice. He thought that I was you, Dan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Don't be so surprised. You're both good looking blokes.
He doesn't know that Dan's nickname is Guns, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does that mean, Mike? What do you mean by that, son?
Vince has been in the old yoga. He's shaking up.
Oh, God.
I have to say, I'd lunch with Laura Trinder. Yeah, no. I had lunch with Laura Trinder on the Saturday because it was free comic book day and we had a coffee up at Foyles and she said she loves the fact that you're doing yoga. She thinks very highly of you for doing that.
Thank you, Laura. And thank you, Chris, as well, Chris Wildgoose, because they're very supportive of me. I know that sounds like I'm taking the piss, but I'm being quite genuine.
Following along with Jay Gunn's redrawing of Coalface.
Yep.
That's rather interesting.
He's gone with a slightly different approach, isn't he?
Yeah. So, are we allowed to talk about that? Or
I don't know, actually.
Let's not. Then we don't know.
Safe.
But little shout out to Lambo. Lambo is 50 this week. Happy birthday, Lambo!
Oh, happy birthday, Mark!
Yeah. There you go.
Do you think he got a cake? He must have got a cake.
I reckon he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got a lady jumping out of it. Let's hope, hey.
Yeah. Well, like Under Siege.
Yeah,
it's the only good part of that film.
That'd be awesome.
Take that back.
Yeah, too easy.
Oh no!
What happened to that actress? Is she still knocking around?
Eleni Arnick.
Was she the Baywatch actress?
Yeah.
She was in the TV version of. Oh God, what was that TV show about the family that struck oil?
The Clampets.
Yeah.
God. She was in the movie version of that, and she was in a movie about a submarine.
The Beverly Hillbillies. Is that what
Beverly
it was?
Beverly Hillbillies, yeah.
Lord.
What's that thing with Kelsey Grammer where they're in a submarine? She was in that.
Periscope.
Periscope.
She wasn't in that.
Yeah, she was, yeah.
No, she wasn't.
I would have to verify this in IMDb.
She's not the main...
No, you're thinking of Lauren Holly, who was in Dumb and Dumber.
Are you sure? Oh, okay.
Am I right, Dan?
I'm just trying to spell her name.
Oh God! Right, we'll go back to Dan in a couple of hours.
It's exciting radio.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Oh, are we going to
leave? Siege.
Yeah.
While he's looking that up, when I went to the comic mart with Andy and you guys, it was I was looking basically just through the covers.
All right.
It was just because I'm not as big a comic geek as some of the guys I hang out with. They were looking for a far different sort of market than I was. So I was just going through the long boxes of trades, picking up really old, fun-looking covers, and I got this amazing Manhunter comic that I'd never read Manhunter before, but it was incredible sort of embossed. The designers here were like this.
Oh, it's a Walt Simonson issue. Is that...
Yeah. It's the last one where the writer had died. So it's the last issue, Silent, using just sound effects.
Well, I haven't read that. Okay.
It's stunning. The cover's like red and gold, but like foil embossed. It was it's an absolute treat.
That's a great character as well. He briefly appeared in Justice League. Yeah, really good character.
I liked him. Yeah. He's got I don't know how his massive boots and arm bracelet type things work now. And
yeah, I know you mean.
Physics, not reality, but it was it was good fun. I really enjoyed it, and the cover was stunning.
Yeah,
is that character still around now?
It's a woman. It's a female character now, isn't it? She had a run. I'm going to say about 8 or 9 years ago. Quite an interesting run.
It seems. Yeah, I mean, I don't know too much about DC, so I can't. It was DC, wasn't it? Yeah.
My apologies. You're right, Vince. It was a movie. I'm thinking of a movie called Chasers.
Yeah.
I've got Erica Alina fact here. She was in the 1982 Steven Spielberg E.T. The character Pretty Girl. We all remember that great character.
Oh, Pretty Girl. Of course. Of course. How could we forget?
And the Blob as well.
I like that movie.
She's the one that her face folds in on itself in the car. Do you remember that, Death?
I've only seen that once many years ago.
Oh, classic film. Classic film.
Cool. Brilliant.
I feel like a face folding on itself is the kind of thing you might remember.
Yeah. I feel like right. You know what I mean?
There's enough material to start a podcast about this actress, but we'll talk about that off air.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe a bonus for our Patreon that doesn't exist.
She was in Charles in Charge as well. Nice.
Are we just going to read off her IMDb? Is that what this show's going to be?
Mm-hmm. I've googled Erica Eleniak naked, and it's come up with a few pictures. It's not too bad.
Oh my!
Send them on the chat.
Yeah. Okay.
Tony won't be speaking for the rest of the show. Yeah,
why has he gone on mute?
That brings us nicely over to Letter and Comic Books.
Indeed.
Yes.
God, Dan, you're good. You're good, you are. Yes, as Dad says, we've talked about many different facets of comic books since we started this show. Writing, artwork, colouring, etc., etc. But there's been an important area of comics that we've wanted to cover for a while now, and that is comic book lettering. Now, it's an invisible art in a lot of ways, because if it's good, most people don't even notice it. But if it's bad, you do notice it, and it can completely ruin your enjoyment of a book completely.
Yeah.
We got a couple of listener questions, because when we put the shout out, we had quite a few questions, so that'd be good. We'll get into those later. And I know plenty of thoughts on the subject. But to start us off, let's put the spotlight on Mike. So, Mike, obviously you've got an ever-growing list of lettering credits, but how did you originally get involved with that side of making comics?
That would be through our mutual friend Mike Garley. We've been mates for years, and he was writing comics, and I was not even recently graduated, might have still been at uni, graphic designer anyway. Okay. And he said that there were a lot of he noticed already there was a lot of similarities and the things I was trying to achieve in design and what letterers had to achieve in the comics. So he suggested I had to go on a few bits that he was working on, and then started really enjoying it. It's a lot more creative than design work tends to be. You can get really sort of bogged down in the corporate part of it. So on comics you get different stories, different artists each week or whatever, and it's very more of a creative kind of release to my graphic design sort of brain that I have. So
I mean, like you said, you weren't so much of a like comic follower. Obviously, I guess you read a few comics. So when Mike asked you to jump into this, did you go away and then sort of research, you know, processes or how's best to start? You know, because this was probably in a day where, I mean, there are countless blogs, there are countless videos, etc., on YouTube now about these different things, but there probably wasn't that much resource about when you started.
Yeah, so I read a few comics when I was a kid. I used to love the Asterix books. I had loads of them. And that sort of, and Tintin's. And then I sort of hadn't really touched a comic again until my teens. And then as an adult with a bit more spare cash, I was decided to start buying some more comics. So I bought like Ultimate X-Men. And in fact, one of the first things I'd picked up again when I started buying comics again was actually a Jack Lawrence's run, Dark Vale, that were selling in Borders at the time. So I'd amassed a small collection, and then Mike suggested this. So I wasn't completely unfamiliar with comics at the time. I'd just about come back in, but was really enjoying it again. So yeah, pick up a few of the old books I had. Had a look, it's probably what we do it naturally, but sort of look at patterns and work out what was consistent, what was a thing, what was a rule, what was just someone's style. And then he got me copies, or he lent me copies of his books, Understanding Comics, and the Scott McCloud ones. So I spent a long time looking through those, reading those like from like cover to cover, getting a bit idea of the sort of academia behind comics, just to immerse myself in that world a bit more. And then practice by doing, really, is the sort of general rule.
Mm. So you made sure you did a bit of reading and research before jumping in.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't do it successfully. My first ones were awful, but they, you realize what rules you get wrong, realize why things don't work. Like I had a very design brain when I came to it, so I wasn't using the same rules you might use for comics. My balloons were all very low and thin. I didn't really understand the physics of like balloon tails and where they should point to and how thick they should be. So lots of very long, thin, floating paragraphs. There was loads of errors, but it was because I was coming at it how I would maybe have stacked text in a when laying out a poster or something, rather than how I would approach a comic. So it was lots of issues I had to overcome in that sense. But
one of the things I've noticed, especially in small press, well, essentially in small press, is that when writers want to try and keep the cost down, they have a go at lettering themselves. And I think a lot of people have gone from being amateurs to kind of being professional levels on it. I've certainly seen some. There was a chap who was posting up a comic in on a Facebook group, and the art was absolutely fantastic. And the word balloons were just awful. They were like huge balloons with the text like floating in the middle, and it's covering up loads of the artwork. And I sort of said to him, look, dude, you're doing your comic a disservice.
Totally.
Like this, you need to kind of get someone who knows what they're doing. And a few days later he posted up and he'd got someone.
You see it loads, and it's kind of frustrating, but I can also understand why. Most of these guys have just thought, I want to make a comic, and don't really understand the scale of what comics can be in terms of creative team, but also don't have the resource initially. What they're thinking is that their cost is, I've got to buy an artist to do this because I can't draw, or I've got to get a writer to write this because I can't write, which obviously is the biggest issue, because you've got half your comic missing there if you don't do that. That's your budget gone. Like you probably already outgoing your budget. What was a flight of fancy, and I'm going to write a comic book, and then you having to put hundreds of pounds into getting a few pages done.
With
any further,
small press, though, it seems to be kind of writers are the prime movers. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't say I've seen too many people say, right, I need a writer for the project. Have you ever, you guys ever come across that? Usually it's the writer kind of bringing the project.
I've had a few times, but it's more sort of because I've got, I think it's because I'm on here, I suppose, people think they get a certain impression of me and they think, oh, Tony will write it, you know?
Okay.
I get that. Like, I think probably most of my projects at the moment have been by people approaching me.
Yeah.
You know.
But I mean, like, you wouldn't. I've not seen many gigs where someone says, I'm looking for someone to write a 10-page comic at £50 a page or something like that.
Yeah.
These listing sites where people advertise themselves, like Digital Webbing back in the day, and Zwell, I think, was another forum that I used to look for jobs on. That you do get artists just saying, I'll draw your comic for like X amount of pennies. And it's always like undercutting everyone very dramatically. So it's not a great business practice. They just want to get paid under their belt, I guess. But that's you coming with an idea. And no, you don't see it very often. I haven't seen it. I haven't heard of it. I guess you might just have an idea of like a world or a story, kind of, the small initial seeds of a story. And then you might talk to someone you knew. Maybe people do that with Tony because they listen to him so much, they feel like they know him and know kind of the stuff he's into.
Yeah, I think
like,
you might be right, mate. Yeah, I think that's a good point. Yeah.
So kind of
trust him and share that story with him, because it's a big leap, isn't it, to give someone that window
into
what
you don't know. Christ,
it might be like the biggest, best thing you've ever written or not written or been in charge of, whatever. And then you're going to hand it over to someone else if you just walk away with it. But
Yeah.
So trying to get into lettering, you said starting off with the Scott McCloud books. Was it that literally like your first stepping stone into it, and then away you went?
Yes. I think there was Jim Campbell's blogs as well back in the day that I used to use quite a bit to get sort of understand how to do it in Illustrator, because I was familiar with Illustrator, but only for graphic design purposes.
Yeah.
So I use it on a daily basis, but yeah, not quite how you'd set up, and maybe a lot of that was trial and error as well, about working out how best works for you. Not all letters work the same, I've noticed.
Yeah.
A lot of people have preset balloons and stuff ready that they can just pull in and just adjust slightly, whereas I tend to do every one, you know, particularly with the tails and stuff, just as, you know, as and where I put
it. Yeah, I've seen videos and, like, you know, that show these brilliant sort of shortcuts and, like you say, pre-made balloons and the way that things interlink with pathfinders, etc., blah, blah, blah. And I look at it and think, that's amazing. I'll never do that. You know, it's not the process that's right for me, if that makes sense, because I know the process that I want. I mean, probably if I did more of this stuff, then my lettering would get better. But
generally how it works.
Yeah. So
for anyone that doesn't know Jim Campbell, he's quite an active letterer in the UK. He's very well known, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's spread across more than just the UK nowadays. But he's does a lot of small press work as well, because I think he does it sort of on his, he always treats small press stuff as a side job and helps people out where he can. I think it's a bit more.
Right. And he wrote lots of work. Sort of instructional blogs, did he? Is he still?
Yeah, he's got lots.
If
you just search Jim Campbell's lettering, it'll come up with a blog. I can't remember the name of it, but that was where I started in terms of another person, different lettering tips. He's good, as far as I know, good friends with the Boyles, and I was friends with the Boyles. Connor had pointed me in that direction early doors, I think.
I'd say another good resource is the site blambot.com. And if you follow the site, the chap, I think he's Nate.
Nate Peacock,
Yes, on Twitter. He often tweets out little cheat sheets for...
Yeah, loads of stuff. He's recently redone a whole bunch of it as well. I think he's sort of, every couple of years, he sort of redesigns it all. It's got a good design eye anyway, so it looks lovely again. He's redone his website as well.
Because there's tons of stuff on there. I've read it and thought, I've been lettering my own stuff for years, but then you read it and I was like, that really makes sense. I've not been doing that.
Yeah, and like they'll have the this is the right way, this is the wrong way, sort of like the ticks and the crosses. And yeah, I've certainly looked at pages like that and thought, oh dear, I've done that a couple of times.
Everyone has. You have to, I was definitely using crossbarred eyes at the beginning. I probably didn't even justify some of the text I first, or center align some of the text I first did when I really first started out. And there are loads of actual rules you need to follow, but you can't learn them all by one. At the same time, it'd be incredible if you could just look them all.
Did you want to talk us through some that are important? When you see them, you think, oh, for fuck's sake. Is there a few rules that you know everyone should know about when they're doing something?
Crossbarred eyes is probably the biggest one.
You read about that quite a lot, don't you? I've seen that on Twitter a few times recently.
Yeah. It's the biggest, the first clue when someone says they're a letter and you look at their work and they've got crossbarred eyes in the middle of a word, you're like, nah, you're not.
Right, so is that just at the start of a word, or how does that
work? The only time you use a crossbarred eye is in the personification of I. So I'm.
I get you.
And then every now and again, this is an editorial choice, really, sometimes acronyms like FBI.
Gotcha.
Yeah, then that's a personal choice one. People disagree on that. So you just go with what looks good at the time.
You do, just fight.
Yeah. Just go to a car park.
anything else that springs to mind that sort of...
The standard... I wrote a little blog about it a couple of months ago, didn't I? It was the space in between lines, so the leading... So the default for a font is much too big than you would have in any kind of dialogue balloon, caption box, or thought bubble. You would see you need to close it up a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it was in fact Nate who had a really good tip, and it was you bold two words above each other, and then two different lines above each other, and if there's space in between them, but not loads, just enough so they're definitely separate, good bit of breathing space. Sort of a similar maybe distance to like the thickness of the actual letter itself.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then unbold them, and that's your go.
When it comes to bolding, I've wondered this. What is the rhyme and reason to bolding certain words and not others?
It's emphasis. You don't talk in a monotone. Well, I do. I've got a pretty monotone voice, but generally speaking, people will accentuate certain words that are that are more important. You know,
like Shatner, like Kirk.
Yeah. It's lettering an actual comic for Shatner's voice would be a pain in the ass. Because he breaks, he'd have like ellipsis everywhere. He cuts himself off, so he'd have a couple of M dashes in there as well every now and again. And then his average probably word count in a balloon would be like 3 or 4.
Yeah, wouldn't it? You need to draw another panel.
A couple of times when I've lettered other people's comics and added the emphasis by the bold in stuff, and that's usually kind of, well, I've just gone ahead and done it. But
yeah, it varies from writer to writer. So like when I was Mikey back in the day, I got used to how he wrote, and then the next sort of main one I got that was a lot of work was John Locke on Afterlife. And they have particular styles of how they write, but they both did their own emphasis. Then the first time I had a writer who was like, can you put some bolds in there for me after the first draft had been done? And I was like, I mean, really? Do you want more? Like, it seems like a really strange request because I don't know that character intimately.
Yeah.
I spent about, you know, if it's a new book, maybe 3/4 an hour on a page at the beginning. Like, that's not enough to get to know someone's tone, their personality, whereas emphasis that's what it is. Like, if you've got a really animated character, there's more emphasis. If it's a really outlandish, like, I don't know, like a celebrity TV host kind of thing, that's going to be loads of bolds in there. And it's, whereas if you're quite calm and collected, you're not going to have much bold. You know, if I don't know if you guys watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but if Captain Holt did a speech, there's not going to be a huge amount of emphasis in his speech.
Or you've got a robot talking or something like that, there's all that as well, isn't there? You know,
The other thing is, people write in like, when you're used to writing like a script, you don't have to think about it visually, which is kind of counterintuitive in the sense that underlines and italics, you can only use one of those for what you're doing.
You have a bit of back and forth, like when you letter it, you give it to the writer and they say, well, do X, Y, and Z. Presumably you've encountered that yourself, Mike.
Yeah, each one has a different kind of set of what they want you to do. I mean, I go through and I'll change minor things where I am certain I'm right, like in terms of punctuation or a bit of grammar and stuff. But usually they'll be like, most writers say when they want words bolded, they say when they're quoting stuff, so that you might have to have things in quotes or in italics, depending on what you're doing. They'll be like quite clear. They'll be clear on the sound effects they want to use and not just put a car crushing sound effect here.
Or it's interesting. I'm writing something that's got music, that's got musical lyrics. So I want sort of in almost in like a wavy line.
Yeah.
With the musical notes around it. And you know, it's interesting, isn't it?
That's what I did for in Viper in the second part. There's like the dance studio and you got the kind of, I tried to go for that.
Yeah.
It's kind of tricky.
It's unpleasant visually to try and like warp text. So I try and avoid it, but you can't always. We did it in Samurai Slasher 1.
Okay.
Andy Cliff's story in that was really kind of stylized, like old school, like his the new one he's done. But we had the opening scene is them in a little camper van, and there was some song going in the background, and I remember not enjoying having to put that on there. It jarred with my design brain.
Trying to juggle it. So we've had a question in about the digital and traditional lettering, and personally I'm in the kind of I think there's room for both and both should be sort of celebrated and used. But yourself, which one do you kind of lean towards out of the two?
I digital and only digital. I mean, I've had a go at doing a bit, but you don't get, I mean, fundamentally it's hard to do because you don't get artwork physically.
So
traditionally you would letter on to the actual Bristol board someone sends you. So you've got an 11x17 board, you've got an aims guide to like draw the lines perfectly, you've got a drawing board and a slide, you really like a technical drawing kind of setup, and physically people haven't got that anymore. But it only works if you've got the artwork in that size in the first place.
Not necessarily all the time though, Mike. I mean, I've got a couple of original pages here of Marvel work and it's actually stuck on the page.
Yeah, I was going to say, make sense?
That sometimes happens as well, I think.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if
a letterer works from the 70s. Still, from when they worked traditionally, originally, when they learnt their craft, so an older letterer perhaps, then they'll definitely carry that through. There aren't many contemporary letterers who have made that step sort of backwards, as it were.
Yeah, you
it's
get it.
More the other way around, where they've been trained traditionally and then they've gone digitally, and they don't mind going back to traditionally occasionally if someone asks for it. But in terms of what they can achieve and what you'd have to pay for that, that would be ridiculous, because they can't achieve the same amount of work in the time that a digital letterer can.
Yeah, Christ, imagine.
But at the same time, you shouldn't let the fact that digital lettering is cheap and quick make you let it be cheap and quick, if you know what I mean. Yeah. You should actually the same.
It depends on the project, doesn't it? Sometimes it suits a project, sometimes it doesn't, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a start. It's the choice if you want it to look like. But make it that choice for that reason.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't imagine the sheep and the wolves with digital lettering.
Yeah. Or comedy kung fu.
Yeah, they're
if an artist is doing the lettering themselves, they will sometimes do it traditionally, but then they've got the artwork there. But with the majority of teams nowadays, they aren't localized and they don't send each other giant packages of artwork. But you know, I've been working on teams that have a writer in America, a artist in the Philippines, a colorist in Spain somewhere, and then I'm in the UK. Like, you can't. No one's going to send artwork there, are they? It's not going to. It wouldn't work. Yeah. So there wouldn't be any way of doing it other than digitally. But that's the joy of digital work, is that you can do it anywhere for anyone, and deliver the same files that you would get printed easily with the internet. So it's not a massive issue. But there's still an art form to digital lettering.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, I mean,
I was going to ask you about. I was going to ask you about that, actually, Mike, because to me, lettering is that thing. If you, for me, reading a comic is like a hugely immersive thing, and I'm actually not actually that conscious that I'm reading words, if that makes sense.
No, Dan, like, point out really... you shouldn't be.
Yeah.
You wouldn't notice that you are lettering. You're reading any letters. That's the whole point. And like they've already said, it's like design work in that if you notice the design, you've probably been done wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you shouldn't notice that you're reading a comic book. You shouldn't have to think about it. It should be seamless. That's why the flow of panels through a page and balloons through a panel is important. You have to go in a certain... You know, if you have to look around for the next balloon, or if you read something and it suddenly feels like maybe you should have heard a sentence before that one, then you've got problems.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like the letter is like the drummer in a band. Do you know what I mean? You don't always, you know, without them, it's a very different proposition, and like a lot of the time you don't necessarily notice their contribution when you listen to the song. But without the rhythm section, you have nothing to a song, you know. But they're never the ones that get the front pages, or like, you know, it's
the words that move you as well, isn't it? It's the words that you come away with, and being able to hear them in your head rather than reading them on a page.
And I've read comics,
reading a novel, you know?
Yeah, I've read comics where even if it's just a simple, you know, it's a very powerful scene, but it's just one speech bubble with one word in it, and the way that is framed and placed is just massively affecting.
You think about that one page, and if the panel is at the start of the page or the end of the page, or sometimes even in the middle of the page, it moves the emphasis of the whole meaning of it, doesn't it? You know,
that's why I don't. I mean, it's moving off topic slightly. That's why I don't get on with the guided view in comiXology, because for me, the panel is all about pacing. And if you take away the other panels and their position on the page, then you don't get that beat in the same way.
Okay, interesting. Yeah,
so for me, that's why I don't like reading them panel by panel.
And it does introduce a different rhythm,
sizes of pixels all the time, but different clock altogether.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I can see that. I don't mind the guided view, but yeah, I can see how it kind of like takes away the rhythm. I mean, there's certainly, when I was reading Nom, there's like big pages and it kind of focuses on bits of it and pulls back to see the lot, and you kind of like, it feels like this should have been one thing.
Yeah.
But then it's kind of like this subjective of whoever's setting that page up when they set the guided view up over at comiXology. Yeah.
I think guided view is good for cinematic pacing, but not necessarily sequential pacing. They're two very different things. You can have like the cinematic that feels like a movie as you're reading it, but you don't always get that sequential
storytelling. The pacing is controlled by the reader in guided view, which can be guided wrong term really for that, but by the panel slightly. But you've only got one panel to work with, obviously, to tell them that it's quick or that it's slow. Like, other than that, it's just up to the guy tapping the screen to dictate the pacing, so it's them in control of it.
I completely moved the emphasis of pages. I wrote a piece on it recently about there's a scene in an early comic book I was reading, which is when you look at the whole page, you see a guy falling and hanging himself. But when you're reading it guided view, it's like totally different. Mm. Yeah, totally different.
Yeah. But that's something you're saying about like that one balloon at a certain point can do all of that for you. Like, yeah, that wouldn't work on a whole page on a tiny little phone either, so you can see why they would cut to it and then cut away. Like, you can, it's made for for mobiles and stuff, isn't it? It's the whole point of it. I just wouldn't read it on anything other than a mobile. Wouldn't go into a guided view.
Yeah,
it's my personal one, but yeah, that placement of that balloon, it's the visualization of the writer's words, and if the writer deems their words important, then they should deem the lettering important.
Yeah.
And going back to your previous thing about what the small press seeing people not hiring letterers, it's actually, when you work it out, it's like the cheapest part of your comic project. So
yeah,
if you're gonna, it's the cheapest way to get the most out of your, to make your thing look professional, to make your project look like a finished thing. So it's, in my opinion, and it's obviously biased because I'm a letterer, but it's one of the easiest ways to make your projects stand out or not sink to the bottom.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, if you kind of got everything else absolutely the way you want it, and then you kind of cheap out on that finishing, like you said before, Vince, about the band metaphor, it can really throw the whole thing out of kilter.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, 50% of comic fans aren't going to notice because they're just enjoying a story and they're not. Yeah. But then the ones that are... I struggle to read a lot of comics now because of the lettering, because I'm so... used to micro details in that sense.
Yeah.
Smallest break from something. I read a comic the same way I'm editing my own book. Like, well, after I've gone done a page, it's double check I haven't got any cross-eyed eyes or weird double spaces anyway. And I read that automatically as I go along without, I don't realize I'm doing it, but then I meet it in a book that I haven't edited and I'm like, ugh, that's jarring. And that it breaks me way out of the experience, you know, that seamless comic experience that I was having until that point.
Old eagle-eyed Vince spotted a bit of overset text on one of my Viper pages, didn't you, Vince? This was about setting it off to press.
Good catch, like, sir.
Yeah.
It's always, always pays to just, like, even if you looked at it a million times, just look at it again, because it was literally the last thing I looked at.
Yeah, it's like, oh, thank fuck.
But you do this for a living anyway, so you be proofing documents has got to be something that you've setting off to print or whatever. It's got to be pretty... well, old machine now, and you're in.
Yeah.
People say about, like, the proofreader and editors, like, you, if you look at the same fucking thing over and over for days and days, there'll be something sticking right out to you, but you won't see it. But as soon as you show it to someone else who does the same thing, you're like, well, what's that?
Yeah.
And you're like, totally. Oh, fuck.
If you're, even if you're a professional proofer, then get someone else to proof your document, because your eyes are just looking at the same thing the whole time. I mean, I'm a professional designer. I stare at my one design the whole day. I need to show someone else because I will miss the fact that I spelled blood wrong.
Yeah.
Like, just stupid little things like that. Like, you're so you're looking at things in micro detail, you're not looking at the big picture, and it's so easy not to see the most obvious of mistakes sometimes.
I didn't a couple of weeks back set an advert for a client, and I misspelt their name two characters were flipped around in the job sheet title, so it wouldn't even appear on the artwork, and they rung up and complained about that, and I was like, okay.
Another reason why a designer shouldn't be typing stuff out, copy and paste. I hate every now and again you get the notes given in the most awkward format that you can't copy and paste it.
Yeah,
and you have to type a little bit out, and it's horrible because that's where errors are going to happen.
Yeah, I worked with some old school designers, and some of them said, "Oh, we never used to have like text on digital; you'd have to type it all out." And I was like, "Well, now we do." So.
What's your argument? Hats off to people who worked both in design and lettering before it was all digitized. I love both of those crafts, and I enjoy doing both those crafts, but I could not have done them if I was doing it in the 70s.
Pre-Mac
time.
Yeah.
Because my boss tells me about when they had to like do paste-ups and shoot it with this fucking great massive camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, oh, Lord, that sounds awful.
I just don't have the patience. I have a really short attention span.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I also get sucked into things in micro detail and can spend hours looking at an eye, but like, it doesn't work like that. So I can't pick and choose when it's going to happen. Most things I will just not have the patience to sit there and
Why if Tony's not here, I'm not sure if he is now, but there's a sort of technical detail of the very technical in regards to comics is the print when you're doing your letters to only do it in K, in black,
right?
Because if you do four colors. Would you like to give the listeners a quick overview of that, if you want?
Yeah, it's the up end of the geeky scale.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it depends how you're printing your comics, but if you're getting a large rundown, you're using a litho type printing type, and it uses four different colors to print like on different plates. Yeah. So if you're using four colors, so there's two kinds of black basically. You have a sort of rich black that involves all four of those colors, which is a really thick, rich black, as the name would suggest. And then you have key, which is like the registration, and that's like black, but on the one plate, the black plate.
Yeah.
So obviously, if you're only using color on one plate, you're going to get that plate perfectly aligned with the nothing. So it's not going to be an issue. Whereas if you're using a rich black, you've got four plates of, you know, up to four plates all doing the same letter. And if they're slightly off, you're going to get a fuzzy edge.
Yeah.
So in theory, it's not done 100% in time. And I'm guilty of it as well. It's one of the few things, it's one of the last things I'll check if I have time. I've done all that stuff, but you managed to set it up kind of correctly.
Yeah.
If well-oiled machine, or if you're working with a big publisher, they'll give you some rules to start with.
Yeah. And for God's sake, people, don't do RGB.
If you're setting work, like you ideally don't really want to be doing text in Photoshop. I do it because I do the web stuff. But you want to be sort of doing your artwork however you produce it, and then lettering in a program like Illustrator or InDesign. You can do that.
You can. Some people do that. I think it's easier with newer versions. I've never attempted it. But you shouldn't be lettering in Photoshop, really.
I've never made a balloon in InDesign, but I imagine it'd be relative. If you can do it in Illustrator, you should be able to do it in InDesign.
Yeah, they changed the tools a little bit. So you've got the same vector tools and the same Pathfinder kind of functionality. So it is not impossible.
All the programs kind of communicate with each other a bit better.
They do nowadays. Yeah, the newer ones from about 4 or 5 onwards, CS5 onwards.
Yeah. So if you can prat around with the technical bits in InDesign a little quick, it may be just for personal reasons, but I find it easier to kind of fuck around with the text in InDesign over Illustrator. But I only use Illustrator for kind of graphic-y stuff as opposed to doing text. So maybe just use.
I suppose there isn't really much text editing you should be doing in Illustrator, if that makes sense.
Like,
decent comic book font, which is again, go to Blambot or Comic Craft for your fonts, pay some money for them. Blambot's got loads of free ones if you're doing small press stuff, but they should be
sorted.
So you wouldn't need to do any kind of kerning adjustments.
Well,
and particularly Nate's got into that, Blambot's got into that recently with this open type features and stuff, so that he has his newest ones, what's it called, Spinnerack, I think, is the one I downloaded recently on his professional fonts. But it's got multiples of every letter so that it will always look like hand-drawn text.
I mean, obviously, you have to pay for these fonts, but you're paying for something professional quality that you see in your weekly comic books that you get from the store.
Yeah.
You know, and it pays in the long run, because once you've got that font, do you know what I mean? That could be the style of your dialogue for your comic going forward for all.
You've only got to look at Watchmen. I'm sorry, I had to nip off for a second there, guys, so I didn't hear it all. But you've only got to look at something like Watchmen. You know, that so exemplifies the voices of the characters in that.
Yeah.
How much is it? Did you say there, Mike? Did you? How much are the?
They vary. Glambots are very affordable, actually. So they'll be $20, $30, $40, somewhere in that sort of range for a font license. Yeah. And Comic Crafts are a bit more expensive, but both of these places do sales. Comic Crafts is pretty famous. It's the New Year's Day sale, and price will be whatever the year is. So basically this year they're all $20.18. That makes sense.
Right. Okay. Oh, that's interesting. So,
I don't want to do a disservice in the normal realms of the year, but if you've got any sense about it, you wait till New Year and stage all your cash then.
Yeah. How do you feel about when characters have more than one font or coloured bubble for speaking? That sometimes kind of creeps into comics. You don't see it too much, but does happen.
It's another tool. Like it's a thing you can do. So that doesn't mean you should do it, which is somewhere that people get a bit confused. If it makes a lot of sense and you need to have to justify it to someone who is going to argue against you and then get them convinced, like if you can justify it to someone, then you're probably okay doing it. I did it recently with working on a book with Corey Brotherson, and there was one of the stories in that has a lot of different dialogue types and balloon colors and a few different sort of other styles in there. and it's not the end of the world. Like, it, you just, it's a bit more work. So yeah,
it can add a bit of character sometimes. I mean, yeah. I think one of the big examples of it is Thor in the Marvel comics. He's essentially got his own font, hasn't he? I believe.
Yeah, he talks in Nordic, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But then you got the...
It doesn't have to be an extravagant font. It's just a slight tweak on what you'd normally see, isn't it, really?
In my own, like, my personal opinion, I don't think it's necessary for Thor either. Like, I find it a bit weird, but it's okay. It's whatever. Yeah. Like, it's not offensive to me either.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do it for every single character, then my personal opinion is then I've got to think about... I can't just read it and know who's talking intrinsic. I suddenly have to go, oh, whose text is that? Is that... That was that character. No, who was that? That was someone from the last chapter. I need to know what their voice is now, so they have their big reveal or something. Like, it can distract as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Well, we got a question as soon as we were talking about purchasing fonts, etc. Tom Curry at This Chucklehead, he said, how often do you make your own font for a project, or do you go for a more on the shelf, Blambot, etc. option? I think.
The answer is now always the latter.
Yeah. Have you ever made your own font?
Yes. It's a lot of work. And the software is very expensive.
Really?
So I may or may not have legitimately gained a copy somehow back in the day and had a go at making my own font before. You know, the idea was obviously to buy the software if I wanted to keep doing it, but I'm not going to spend that much money on a bit of software and then go, oh, no, it's not for me. So I did it for that reason and tried it. It was a lot of work. It's very hard. It's totally, like, if you're into it, it's really geeky and it's awesome. Like, and you can have a lot of fun. Spend a lot of time, like, doing micro measurements in between letters and loads of different like glyph combinations.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe how a capital T will sit with every other letter, and you have to, like, individually, like, set that up so that when you type, it adjusts automatically. Yeah. If you're making a good font, that is, like, or you can just hash that out really quickly. Yeah.
For those people who are going to buy, like, Blambot fonts or get their free fonts, for instance, let's just mention a bit about the actual licensing. Because this is something that people might just think, oh, I can download a free font from anywhere, just use it, no one will notice, blah, 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 blah,
yeah,
blah. But there are rights issues, you know, you have to read some of these documents and stuff. So when you get a font, what is your advice to look for in terms of, like, licenses? You know, how can you use these fonts, you know?
So in the most basic of terms, fonts will have, you might see it if you go to, like, I don't know what he used to use in the day, like Defont or something like that. It will say, like, free for personal use, or it will say, and it'll say not for commercial use or free for commercial use. So those are the two, in its most simplest terms, there are two licenses. It's personal and commercial. People make fonts for free that you can use professionally, personally, but you're not allowed to make money off of that font.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Is that like, if you're just messing around for yourself, making a birthday invite or a Word document for work just as a show report or something, that would be okay. But if, as soon as you're going to start making money directly off of it, you need a commercial license.
They can be quite hot shit on that. I mean, like, I think they'd go after bigger companies as opposed to kind of individuals.
Yeah.
But like, we got font managers wherever I've worked that sort of, it's very strictly regulated what you're allowed to use and not, because you can, if you get caught using a font you're not licensed to, well, the bigger company, you certainly can, they're quite happy to bend you over.
It doesn't seem worth the risk, really. The prices you're talking about aren't massive, and even then there are loads of free commercial quality fonts.
Yeah,
I mean,
so I use a site called Font Squirrel quite a lot, which is
that's a good one.
Yeah, designers have picked up for commercially free fonts and selected them and said that these are high enough quality to use in design work.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
I mean, there's several on Blambot where she's kind of said that just go for these, you can use them for small press comics, etc., etc.
Yes,
certainly a lot of the free ones. He's made them free because it's like, make your own comics, you know, you can use them. I think people should still sort of reference where you got them from, like in your inside cover.
I think that's fair.
You know, definitely.
That's a personal choice.
Some people can be quite
necessarily,
but... I remember someone picked up. I didn't have it on the inside cover of, like, Red Mask 1, for instance, and someone picked up on that. So I've put it in subsequent issues.
Okay.
I didn't necessarily...
That's up to Blambot to get good about that.
Yeah.
If he has an issue with it and he asks people to put it in there, then you put it in there. Same with creative attribution and anything else. But if they don't ask for it, you have no reason to.
Yeah. One aspect we haven't covered, and you've done several of these looking at your work, Mike, is the logo
series logo. I mean, that is massive. Like on some comic books, is they're just so iconic, and then others are just total flops. And it's kind of an art form itself. I mean, you think of how simple like the Watchmen one is, but that's iconic. That one it's really kind of good work.
It wouldn't be iconic if it was crap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and there's so many of them that's like, well, that's fantastic.
Did Dave Gibbons invent that? Did he? Did Dave Gibbons design that Watchmen one? I've got a feeling he did, didn't he?
I think so.
Yeah. He had a lot of the design work for Watchmen, didn't he?
Sorry, man.
I think he did a lot of the design work for Watchmen, didn't he? He did a lot.
Yeah, well, the whole thing was quite insular in itself. But back in the day, they used to have in-house letterers, who quite often in the bullpen would end up doing a lot of the logos.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you think about the Superman one with the kind of the 3D kind of letters that are arcing up and sort of extrude beveled out.
Yeah.
That's been around for bloody years, and it still stands the test of time.
And still getting bought up by New Look or whatever to make t-shirt styles.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you take the Uncanny X-Men. That's had a million logos in its years, but there's only one that I can think of, and it's probably from my time reading it. You know, the X-Men that was used on the animated series as well. It's sort of 3D and slightly on an angle.
Yeah.
To me, that's the X-Men logo, nothing else, no matter what they do.
The one that people talk about a lot is the changing 2000 AD one, don't they?
Yeah.
People remember the covers by the particularly, like, they had that sort of curved one.
Yeah.
Then they had the one that was a bit like that X-Men one sort of coming out at you, you know?
Yeah.
This one I've got, the Batman, the visual history, and there's the more relatively recent one that it goes through all the different logos and headers. There's one that Jim Lee does where it's kind of like Batman holding the cape, and I can't stand it. I hate it. It looks really, just really amateurish and bad.
Right.
Which I usually like Jim Lee stuff, but I think he kind of dropped the ball on that one.
If you're into these, the evolution logos and logo design in general for comics, then Todd Klein does an amazing blog.
Oh, yeah, I follow him.
Oh, nice one.
There's loads of blog posts, and he'll go through and find the originals and talk about it. And yeah, he goes into loads of detail. Yeah.
Nice. We got a couple of questions. Let's run through them. No sure. mention one of them. Now, Ludology 2014 at Ludologist 2014. He was wondering about how to letter by hand, and also which program is best for lettering. I think we've covered some of that, really. I mean, for me, Adobe Illustrator is the one I use. But like you said,
that's what I use.
Yeah. But he also did say he loves the Arkham Asylum lettering. I can't remember that.
No, I can't remember that.
I'm
okay. Is that really spiky?
Yeah.
Yeah, really scratchy and spiky. Yeah. I would imagine that being hand.
Yeah, that must be hand lettering.
If you want to try hand lettering, you need something called an Ames guide, which allows you to draw a baseline and a sort of midline for your letters, and draw loads of straight lines. So if you want to try it, get one of those.
Yeah, you need a lot of patience, don't you,
to steady hand. You've got to pencil things out and then get a nice pen.
Often see that on talk about the great Nick Pollux again. If you follow him on Instagram or Twitter, you'll see his pages, and you can see the blue lines that he's drawn to letter the text on.
I saw recently he's got one of the back covers of Slang Pictorial 3. He's got the thank you page, which everyone normally just types up in Illustrator or InDesign or whatever, but he's hand lettered all of the names and had to fit them onto this page.
I got a late night text from Nick saying this is my third go at it.
Fucking hell.
You are making a bluff going back. You're not gonna get it right either, so you need to have that white out stuff, what they call like Tipex, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you wanna be able to clean it up afterwards once you scanned it in.
Yeah.
You're gonna make mistakes. You can't do something that big and not make mistakes the first time. You have to do it apparently four goes.
Yeah. So, okay.
To counter Adobe, I'm going to throw another bit of software in there, if that's all right.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, as designers, you're probably constantly signed up to Adobe.
Yeah.
For the various programs that you use. But I've been using one, I've just switched everything over for Illustrator anyway, called Affinity. Affinity Design or Designer.
Oh, I've heard a lot
of that one.
And it's been out for a couple of years now, and it is up to standard now. You can do the whole book in it.
Nice.
And that's a one-off cost of like 40, 50 quid, Matt.
Oh, nice one.
They've got Photo as well, which is their alternative to Photoshop, which I've just started using.
Can you letter in Manga Studio or Clip?
I've never tried it.
I don't know if that's possible
do,
or not.
But I think.
Yeah, and I know certainly I've watched some YouTube videos on like when people do their webcomics on Procreate, because it's like a drawing software. They're literally they're hand drawing, not Procreate like that, Tony.
Shame.
Affinity's next bit of software is going to be their publisher tool. So once that comes out, I'll sack off the whole of Adobe and not go back there. They just suck the money out of everyone in the world, so they don't deserve it.
Interesting.
They're not pushing their craft anymore, so. Yeah.
Of course, folks, we will put as many links in our show notes as we can.
Definitely.
Okay, Reese Finley at Reesey Time, he says, I almost don't want to say this if we're sick saying it. Comic Sans, hot or not?
Well, hot. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
You don't know Comic Sans? Come on.
Comic Sans.
Oh right. Oh yeah, I know. Yeah. It's cool, isn't it? It's well cool.
It's got the word comic in it, but that's about as far as I get. Comic book.
Yeah. I think most people that have anything to do with fonts or like fonts in general probably won't dignify that with an answer.
It's like to in terms of typography, it's not even a nicely designed font.
No.
No.
I can see how people want to use it. It looks fun and kind. There are other fonts that do that as well. So
that's the kind of font I'd expect like a passive aggressive note to be typed on, putting them like the work kitchen.
Yeah.
About eating someone else's fucking sandwiches,
and they've put part of it in red. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. My guardian made me do a scene in one of the Kill Screen backstories in it. Some real.
I remember that.
Pleasure in that.
Amazing. Another question is from. I hope I'm saying this right, Tony. Farhan, is it Farhan? Qureshi.
Farhan.
Farhan, correct.
Yeah.
Apologies.
Yeah, I got it wrong when I interviewed him. And I think that's
it. With confidence, students be fine.
I never say anything with confidence on this show. now, he said, are there any tips for where to look for letterers? What should writers look for when looking for a letterer?
Yeah. Well, there's one on the show. Just bring him up.
Is
in what to look for when you're looking at lettering samples?
I think more to where would you find them, Mike, I suppose. Mm. Yeah.
The internet. Google. No, there's a forum I used to use called Digital Webbing, which I think is still active. It was quiet for a while, but it got active again. So you can find them there. Comic Art Submissions, I think it's called as well.
Yeah.
Run by a guy called Terry.
As I say, ever tweet at the Awesome Comic Pod Twitter account, we'll happily retweet that to the followers.
I can off the top of my head think about five people who will immediately reply.
Yeah.
You could do worse than just putting in the Twitter comment letter and it comes up. A bunch of them, you know, they're getting better at branding nowadays, so make sure they have it in their handle or their bio or something.
Yeah.
If you
studied graphic design, are you a frustrated artist as well, Mike? Have you always fancied that as well?
I'm a designer because I can't illustrate, if that makes
kind of, yeah, I get you.
I did it at college. I was doing visual communication I didn't know what I was going to do at college, and then I did a foundation art and design and did a bit of everything.
Right.
And I thought I was going to do photography because I like taking photos. And then on the VizCom section, which is visual communication, just sort of fell into it there.
Okay. Yeah, cool. We could always do a photo story together, couldn't we? That'd be cool. Yeah.
Oh, my word. That's a dangerous game.
That sounds like a bad date.
Your own version of Doom Lord or something.
Yeah. Bum Lord. Oh my
Bum
god.
Lord.
He's got a face as his ass. Right. Now Emporium Purgatorio at Mperg on Twitter. He said, are there others letterers out there that don't like the bubble usually employed for lettering? And or other ways. Are there other ways to have text on the page that don't involve them?
Yeah, there are. You see it quite often now.
Yeah. It's done in the Archer comics, isn't it? Quite a lot.
Just like a line sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Direct words. Yeah.
Do you think
the balloon's there for contrast mostly?
Yeah. Do you think if you're going to do that, you should do it all the way through, or do you think, you know, should you go with bubbles or not with, you know, should you make that choice at the beginning?
I would be consistent. That's normally the general rule for all of these things, be consistent throughout. So it's a decision you've got to make before you do the artwork.
Yeah.
Because the artist or the colorist or the inker needs to bear that in mind when they're doing the backgrounds and stuff.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah.
One thing that fucks me off is thinking up different sound effects for people getting punched in the face, getting whacked. As any time, times you can put pow, bam, crack, and you're like,
thinking of the sound effects can be
I've asked on Twitter and Facebook before about a sound effect. People always come up with quite original things. Usually it's fucking ghastly and rude where I'm concerned, but someone usually comes up with something that's...
Someone started doing a database of those kind of words, but it kind of fell off the face of the internet.
Oh, really?
That'd have been great.
That would be an amazing reference.
Gunfire sound effect, and it would have a load of them.
Yeah.
I think
there's always room if you've got a lot of sound effects, I'd maybe question why you're using them.
Okay.
Oh. You'd get an artist who could make it look like they're getting punched instead.
Yeah. Good point.
But it varies on the style of the comic, obviously. If you've got something more slapstick and a bit more Looney Tunes-esque, then, you know, I can understand why you're doing a lot of sound effects.
Yeah.
We do quite a lot in Samurai Slasher, and they're generally comedic. Like, it's the style of the comic. Whereas we did Eponymous, which is like an action comic, and Martin's artwork is so good that you can tell when someone's getting punched or a car's getting stomped or something blowing up. You don't need to.
Yeah, the artwork can really do the job for you in that sense, can't it?
Yeah, you've got to work with the artwork, not instead of the artwork.
Excuse me for not knowing this, Mike, but have you worked for any of the sort of bigger companies recently?
No, I haven't.
Is that something you want to do, pictures.
The longer I hang out in the lettering scene, the less keen I am. Obviously, that was the primary goal when I was first doing it. Work for one of the big guys, get a Gene job, move to America or something, like when you're pipe dream. But the more you see how letters get treated by that mid rank of publishers, I don't think I'd want to be involved with much of them, to be honest with you.
Is it sort of rush, suddenly we need this done?
You're the last step on the sort of rung, so you get treated like utter shit by everyone from the sound of it. And the guys I talk to that are in that, like, and it's not for every publisher, like, obviously some of them are doing the things right, but for the guys that are pumping out a lot of stuff, they're pushing everyone to the deadlines, and you're the last stop on that. So
I mean, and sometimes that's not always the editorial's fault, is it? Sometimes it's a late artist or even a late writer further up the chain, isn't it?
If it's run late, it's the editorial's fault.
It's
the editorial's fault if they've let it run late.
Right.
The fact that your letter might be able to cram it out in one evening rather than going to bed doesn't mean you should.
And
if he does, you should worship him for it, thank him, pay him extra for it, and then probably not to do it again.
Because digital has made things faster, but also you've got to be careful. You never want to rush any process of making comics, I don't think.
You shouldn't. But there's also that person isn't working on just your book.
Yeah.
They've got other work they've got to schedule up. They've got their own lives they have to organise. Like, you can't just dump your crap on their desk when you want it and expect it to be treated the next thing they do.
Yeah.
A lot of the guys that I talk to will now have things like rush fees. So if this is their normal price, and then if you're going to do that to them, you'll pay extra for it.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. And I'm sure that's definitely a learning from past experience, isn't it? It's one of those.
Yeah.
Right.
I've learned more without ever happening to me by talking to the guys who've had it happen to them, and it makes you approach everything a lot more professionally because it protects you. So when you think about laying out your own rules, your own working conditions, your own how you want to be treated at the beginning, it feels weirdly informal at the beginning to
But it's sensible, isn't it, to just sort of say, right, I'm on board with this project, but here it is in black and white. You know, if it's going to get to me late, it will cost you more, such and such. You know,
it's not going to be an issue if you're not a dick about it.
Yeah,
basically.
It's
general life rule, Billy.
Common sense and professionalism, which there isn't. There isn't always a lot of common sense or professionalism.
There's always room for more.
Yeah,
and it's not something we all achieve all the time, but we can totally be better at it, all of us.
Yeah. Now, we had a couple of other questions, but I think we've actually covered everything that people asked.
Yeah.
A lot of people are asking about hand lettering. To anyone out there who's doing any hand lettering, I salute you and good luck.
Amen. Yeah.
It's lovely to see sometimes, isn't it? I always marvel at some of Nick's work when he sends it through, and I think, fuck me, Jesus Christ.
I mean, hand lettering is like original art pages as well. It's something I never want to see die out. I want people to still be doing this, you know, just because digital's there. Digital isn't their answer to everything.
Yeah, I'd be surprised at how much you'll find of it nowadays. It'll be artists like Nick who are doing it themselves, so you're going to find it. And that's a beautiful thing, and it will hopefully keep existing in its own special world, but you're going to see less and less of it from
actual
I think you're
right. It's the speed thing, though, I think, part of it, Mike, isn't it? People want it so now, don't they? So it's easier and quicker, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you do it on the go? Do you have it on your tablet and all that sort of thing? Do you? Is it
no, although that might be. I was talking to Vince earlier on about how long it would take me to get online just because I had to restart my computer. My Mac is on its last legs. It's a desktop. And the next upgrade will be a MacBook with a monitor so I can do it a bit more freely. It'll give me a bit of flexibility, and I would do it on the train on the way to work occasionally rather than drive if I have the deadlines, or I could just not be a complete recluse in my own home and sit with a girlfriend sometimes and do it there. I've got better now. This is subjective, but my office is now in the lounge or dining room, so I can sort of be in the same room, but it's still very, I have to hide in the corner with headphones on. It's not pleasant.
Yeah, my work computer is like in the front room. So when my wife's doing whatever there and I'm working away, she often says to me, "Oh, come on, Dan, you said he was going to watch this." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, I will. I'm just going to do this while I'm doing that."
I've heard that. I've heard that mouth load. So, yeah. I hear you.
Yeah, we've all done that. I'll just do this bit. And then you do that bit. And, oh, actually, while I'm here, I'll just do that bit. It won't take long. I'll just do this bit.
Yeah.
And it's 10 o'clock.
And then we all end up single or divorced. So
we might be happier. Why don't we all move in a house together? That'd be nice.
Yay. Just make comments.
Yeah.
See, that's how studio started.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I'd love a studio because of that. You could just leave at 6 or whatever, or 5. That'd be nice. Wouldn't it just stop working? I do design during the day and I work in the evening. So if I've got a lot on, then I'm going to be sat at my desk doing stuff. So.
And sometimes it's hard, isn't it? Like when you're staring at a screen all day, sometimes the last thing you want to do is come home and stare at a screen for the whole evening.
One thing that's pissed on my chips a bit is with this GDPR that's coming in, which is a new initiative by the government to basically try and cut down on data loss within businesses and stuff. And the long and the short of it is they're going to disable the USB drives in our office because they don't want work being put on hard drives or memory sticks and lost. So that's kind of
the only way you transfer stuff.
Yeah. So basically, you can only transfer stuff online, but it's like, oh, fuck's sake, I'll carry my work to work on a bloody USB stick. So if I want to quickly letter something or do something on a bit of comic I'm working on, now I've got to fucking have it on Google Drive and all that caper. Frustrating.
If they're disabling USB drives, how are they going to plug in like mice, keyboards?
They work for power, but you can't like put stuff on and off of it.
That sounds like too much effort.
Yeah.
Welcome to my world. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so that's just a pet peeve there. Nothing to do with lettering or anything else.
Dan just needs to get it off his chest sometimes.
Yeah.
You got to get these things off sometimes. I mean, I'm really looking forward to setting up getting my new setup for my home one. It's going to be a luxury. But now you have a billion different like ports I don't understand because I didn't change my computer in 10 years. So there's, I don't know, fire ports and all sorts.
Got one last year and my computer before that had no USBs on the front, which is a fucking nightmare. Because now
that is a pain in the arse, and you got to walk around the back of your computer and try and figure it out. Yeah.
But at the same time, people don't appreciate the ones at the back because the ones in the front are there. They use them at convenience. So it's probably a little bit techie, but the ones on your front aren't as fast for charging or transferring data as the ones on your back of your computer are.
I think you can get there's some which they have like a USB 2, which is like as fast or some shit. I can't remember what it is.
It's because it's not directly attached to the motherboard, though, so it has to be
somewhere.
So it's never going to be as fast as the USB 2 on the back. It's the USB 2 on the front.
This show has never been so technical.
Sexy.
I feel like we're just getting a whole new audience. Oh, yeah.
I feel like we're in the future because somebody said motherboard and I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
I used to do, my first course was software development, like programming, so we could delve into a whole world of
computers.
If you ever wanted to.
Let's just plug ourselves directly into the computer.
Yeah.
A lot of my job is doing websites and stuff at work, so I could talk to you in CSS and HTML if you want.
Oh my god.
CSS Plus. What about CSS Plus? I'm into that.
Oh, that sounds creepy. I want to feel about any of that, really.
You feel good about it.
I'm just going to drink my way out of this.
Oh dear. Anyway, I feel nice. Like we did only scrape the top of the iceberg. What on earth was that noise?
Where did your voice go for a minute then?
Yeah, were you spray painting yourself or something?
It sounded like you were sat in a hole.
Did. Yeah.
I am sat in a hole.
Tony's, isn't you?
Yeah. Apparently Tony's I've got to rub hole. The lotion on that's my skin or else I'll get the hose again. That's normally what happens.
Sitting in Tony's hole. Let's do that back story for the next issue.
Oh dear. Anyway, we have only scraped the top of the iceberg, I think, when it comes to lettering. But hopefully, folks, we dropped an awful lot of knowledge on you there.
I've learned a lot there.
Yeah. I was thinking, and talking on at conventions, come find a letter and just like myself or one of the others and chat. And if you find it interesting, like we're always happy to geek out on some lettering.
Yeah. Before we came on, you were saying you were the UK's number one letterer, weren't you, Mike? Yeah.
I was highly embarrassed by Vince's announcement of my appearance. My girlfriend would not stop ripping the piss out of me for it either.
That's what we're here, my friend.
It might be fun in the Awesome Comic Pod group to make up like a fictional comic and people come up with logos like for the front cover. And
that'd be fun.
So you'd call up with some random comic and it's a horror comic, so you've got to have it accordingly.
Pick a theme. A genre and then a name. We can do a random generator, or Tony can just pull something out of his ass. Then whatever.
Oh, you never know what's going to come out of there.
Ready? This is a good plan. I'm liking this.
Yeah.
What was one you had earlier? Buttfate and the Butthead, was it?
What was that beer I was drinking the other day?
It was Bumlord. Bumlord.
Bumlord, yeah.
Could do Bumlord.
All we could do, I don't know, Dick Splash, Erotic Detective.
Makes yourself that one.
This is left bollock.
Oh dear, yes, but we will put lots of links in this week's show notes, so
good luck. Big splash.
And obviously, like Mike says, there's a lot of great letterers out there and at cons and stuff, and anyone who does lettering loves to talk a bit of shop, so don't be afraid to ask about it. So
they're most likely a geek at heart.
Well, so you almost started on about motherboards, so you've outed yourself.
That was a deep dive.
Yeah,
I've never finished up being a geek. My geekiness doesn't lie necessarily directly on comics. It lives in the world around it. So let's talk that. I'm still learning about comics, as much fun as it is.
Oh, that's why he listens to the show, folks.
Hells yeah.
You learn nothing from this show.
No, all I know here is that every comic is amazing.
Yes.
Number one.
And it is.
You were on before we started recording, so you know that's not the fucking case.
Yeah. There's a few ways you recommend this stuff, and you make it sound, and this is probably a compliment, already. You make it sound so good. And I'm like, that sounds like right down my alley, and I'll open it up and be like, oh, what were they?
It's in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah. But like, I get hung up on like lettering mainly, but then if the art's a bit weird or the design's a bit funky, so I get it's just my problem is that I get hung up on little details too soon. But
I get extremely hung up on people who can't spell you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or your that fucking drives me up the wall. That you must get that all the time. I was doing scripts.
Oh yeah, that's one of the most things I'll change is putting the odd comma in before a name if someone's talking to someone, finishing a word with a full stop, taking off excessive amounts of exclamation marks. You only have one. A little bit. They are there.
Oh god.
I had an eagle-eyed viewer pull me up on a tweet earlier in the week when I put it with an apostrophe s.
That's not too bad. It's a tweet. If you've had a script that you've gone over 7-8 times, you've had someone look at, hopefully, then no excuse.
I've given up on punctuation on my tweets, and I hope it drives people mad.
I'll give thumbs up to anyone who wants to correct me on my punctuation, because it's an ever-ending fucking job.
That is some stamina. No, I mean, I try. Like, I'm that annoying guy that, like, fully edits his... like thinks in full sentences, types in full sentences. I don't use any short, like as a rule, use much short slang and internet lingo. I like old fashioned English, but it doesn't mean I get it right.
Yeah.
I'm still learning that as well.
what you mentioned, Tony, if someone makes an argument about a point, usually it's political, and they've not used "you are, you're right," uh-huh. and someone just puts that in the next tweet, they're fucking over.
It just makes me laugh when people do that.
There's no coming back. Possibly have a good idea about anything if you can't put the right apostrophe in it. Yeah. Like, your point is clearly invalid. Is it? Like, you know, you might have a great theory about politics, feminism, I don't know, Gamergate, but if you put "it's," apparently we have to all disregard your opinion.
Yeah.
Twat.
It's a harsh rule, but we all play by the same rule.
Yeah.
That's why I hate it. I hate it when people on my side of the argument do it as well and go, "Oh, but you spelt, you're wrong."
It's the it's the equivalent of letting your guard down in a boxing match, isn't it? You're going to get one on the chin, aren't you? You know you're going to get it.
Protect yourself, you cocky twat.
Yeah, exactly. TWAT.
Oh dear.
But often I have a tweet that kind of like people start retweeting and liking whatever, and then I look at it and there's a fucking error in it. You're like, oh, I hate that.
Yeah.
God, I hate it when you tweet something and you think, that was a brilliant joke. You post it and then you suddenly realise the spelling mistake and you're like, well, I've just hit myself.
I miss out words. I spell the ones I put in correctly, but I miss out a bloody word.
Yeah. You revise the tweet a couple of times, then you realise, you fucking missed something out. Oh, shit.
That's
a
shit joke.
That's the joy of Facebook, though, is you can edit. That's the only joy of Facebook over Twitter.
Yeah, it is now, isn't it? You can do that, can't you, now? Yeah, it's good.
Should get like a 10-15 minute time frame to change it. But anyway, let's not talk too much about Twitter.
No. Let's talk some shout-outs. Do we have any shout-outs this week, gents?
Yeah, I've got the obvious one.
Go on.
Sice, 2nd of June 2018 in Cardiff. Are you going to this, Mike?
I don't know yet. I want to. I like that show. I went maybe when it sort of restarted a few years ago, but I hadn't been back. And I would like to, but I've taken a hiatus from the comic scene in order to save some money. And so as a result, I've missed some of the ones I really want to do as well.
Okay, mate. Well, it's the 2nd of June, if you can make it. It's the Mercure Hotel in Cardiff. Guests include John Davis Hunt, Christian Wild Goose, Laura Trinder, Rob Williams, Rachel Smith, the Etherington brothers. I think they're turning up in their gold-plated balloon.
Yeah.
Are those guys? Do you reckon, like, so I'm going to interrupt there a little bit. That Kickstarter was nuts.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help but think, like, they've killed themselves by saying they're going to sign every single copy.
I actually genuinely think it couldn't happen to nicer people as well. I think that's what I'm glad about it, you know. If it was, let's not name anyone involved in Tiramisu Gate currently on the internet, but if it happened to them, wouldn't be as happy. But
that, like, you know, they have this huge success and they haven't harped on about it. They spend most of their Twitter retweeting other people's art tips.
Legends.
It's amazing.
But you forget that that isn't just profit.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably not much profit because they've already worked out they're only going to make a little bit on each book because of the packaging, the posting, the printing, all of that stuff. So even though they made, what was it, 250 grand or 250 grand in the end, like, that's not like what it's going to be coming into their pockets. They'll see money.
They can buy three houses in Scotland. That's it. You know what I mean?
I mean, that's a lot of fucking work. Of work.
And it got to 4,000 books, and I was like, no. Like, for Dead Roots, we did a couple of hundred and signed all of those. My God, that is that's 4,000 is nuts.
Yeah, that's not like an evening and a few drinks, is it? It's a bit more than that.
Presumably, at some point, when you get out to a certain number of books, you've got to think about, rather than packaging these all up yourself, think about hiring a shipping company that.
Yeah. So then that's what you're factoring at the beginning, though, isn't it, as well?
You haven't
factored that in, and suddenly that changes the price of stuff.
These are questions that we can put to the brothers when they're on the show in the near future.
Right. Yes.
I'm going to look into the size one. Sorry to bring it back, though, because I like the Welsh crowd. I know quite a few of those guys from the...
Yeah, good laugh, aren't they?
Days. I miss hanging out with those guys.
Cool. Thank you, mate. Other guests are God Machine. If you haven't met God Machine, that's an experience. He's one of my favourite people in the world. I did a panel with him last year. Fucking hilarious. Patrick Goddard. The mighty Martin Simmons, who's riding high on Punk's Not Dead, which is just an amazing book.
Gorgeous man.
Yeah. He's going places, isn't he? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It couldn't happen to a nicer guy again. And Connor Boyle, amongst other people who are going to be there. So we've got a table there. Issue 2 of our anthology comes out, which is now at the printers, we're pleased to say, aren't we, lads?
Very pleased indeed. It's all off. I'm very proud of the issue. I think it's gonna If you liked issue one, just wait for issue two.
It's now a good time to point out the typo on the front cover.
What?
Yeah, what?
You asshole.
I've been on the end of that joke so many times I had to finally use it on someone else.
You know, there's a joke in the second part of Viper that I had to apologise to the proofreader before I gave it to her. I said, look, remember, this is the character saying this, it's not me.
Yeah.
It's a joke. Yeah.
And I tell you something, folks, that joke will stick with you. It is amazing.
She put ooh on the proof. Ooh. Yeah. Could have been worse.
Yeah.
How was that delivered? Like a post-it note?
I printed it on like kind of A4 folded over, so it's like a little booklet, and she made notes in the column, and yeah, it was like,
it's not too bad. Fine. Yeah. I suppose. I had someone the other day on the, I was chatting to a letter, and they were like that the someone had sent printed out the entire proof copy, and then on their own printer, and then wrote loads of post-it notes, and then put it in a package and posted it back to them, which is already weird enough because you can't copy and paste post-it notes, but
yeah.
By the time it arrived, most of the notes had fallen off. We're just in a joint.
Oh, God.
Because you do stuff like PDF markup nowadays, which is so much easier.
Yeah.
But I had 10 pages in the proof slips opposite me, so it wasn't a massive...
That's right.
Issue. Yeah.
Yeah. But
anyway.
There was a note, but the joke stayed in. And yes, so if there's any comment reviewers out there...
They drop me a DM... We put it on the Facebook and we put it on the Twitter today.
Yeah.
So it's the first one on...
I shall forward them it.
It's the first issue on Comic House yet?
Not yet.
Not is it going on? Yet.
It will be soon.
Yes.
Good. And I will read it then.
Okay.
Oh, that's
it's
nice.
My Comic House subscription, which I love.
Nice.
Or if you're at Sice, you can buy one from us direct.
Yeah.
It's available digitally as well online now.
Yeah, and where can you get it down?
So many options.
It's on our Big Cartel store, the Awesome Comic Pod. It's going to be prepped this week for the launch of issue 2, so the day it goes live at Sice, which should be online.
Yeah. Awesomecomicpod.bigcartel.com.
Nice.
There you go.
Terrible shills. We are terrible shills. Any other shout-outs, Danny?
That's all I've got.
Nice. Anyone else before we get on to some fantastic comics?
Anyone reading a copy of the Observer in their room at the moment?
What is that noise?
Mike's
wrapping presents.
Are you wrapping your Christmas presents at the moment?
Anna's cut. My girlfriend's cutting a dress patterns out. I couldn't even hear it. My headphones are good. Sorry, mate.
She can say hello if she wants.
She's also wearing headphones because I banned off making any noise, but she couldn't hear herself making any noise. Whoops. Sorry, guys, that's been going on for ages.
That's all right.
No eye contact, UK's best letterer at work. Just that sort of thing. Yeah.
But if you just use sound effects, it's fine.
More work for me. Anyway, this is a comic show, so we're going to recommend some comics to you lovely people. Who's going to go first this week?
You go, V. I've read your one and I want to hear what you've got to say about it. I liked it.
Okay then. Now I had a couple of choices this week, but I was very interested in it. But I think it come out 2 weeks ago? Or was it this week? I'm not sure.
I think it was last week, wasn't it?
I think it was last week. Yeah. I got it off Comixology, an image book called Death or Glory. Which it's a Rick Remender book. I say Remender. Is that how you say it? I don't know.
I think that's how you say it. Yeah, that's how I say it.
Yeah, and there's no. I mean, he's got amazing titles to his resume, so there you go. But Bengal is the artist, Wooten is the letterer, Gurner is, this is obviously second names because they're so trendy they don't need first names. Now this story is what can you say about this story? It is absolutely phenomenal. It was one of those things that as soon as I finished reading it, there was no other choice for what I was going to talk about this week. The basic synopsis is, meet Glory raised off the grid in a convoy amid truckers, the last men and women fighting for true freedom on the American open road. Now, in order to pay for her beloved dying father's surgery, Glory has 3 days to pull off 4 dangerous cross-county heists with mob killers, crooked cops, and a psycho ex-husband, all out to bring her in or die trying. This is an ongoing series... although with Image, it's probably ongoing in the sense of you get a 6-issue arc normally with this.
Yeah,
that's what you mean. Southern Bastards does that, doesn't it? I think it's It's about 6 issues at a time.
This is extra long as well, isn't it? It's a longer than normal one, I think.
Yes, this one, if I just look at the page count, 46 pages.
Yeah.
Is the first one. And 40 pages of that are story. So you are getting your money's worth. Now, it's a high-octane action crime sort of thriller that opens with a criminal event that happens in a fast food restaurant that Tony Esmond, the dialogue was such that Tony Esmond, he actually took a screenshot of it, of a bit of dialogue and said, good choice, Vince, good choice. And this dialogue, I'm just
going to
yep.
Read it out. You read out the first character, and I'll read out the reply. There you go. Go on, do that.
What? I'll be Kenneth. Shall I?
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Now it's two fast food workers who are talking about. One of them's going on a date with this girl. Okay. So. let's just start like this. Nah, wouldn't dare put my pecker in that, but she did dine in my alley, if you follow.
You're full of shit.
She's a butt licker. She's a butt licker, Curtis. Ask Scotty down at Firestone. You kiss her tonight, you're basically kissing my ass.
Fuck you, Kenneth.
I mean, obviously, we brutalised that dialogue.
But that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And shortly after that happens, someone walks into the burger restaurant and asks for 123 cheeseburgers just before closing. And
you
then,
don't realise why till right at the end, do you?
Yeah. And
I've got to read this fucking comic now.
It is. Yeah. But the way that scene then plays out is quite shocking and epically rendered. I mean, like this... It almost caught me unawares, almost like it was supernatural. And the way that Bengal has sort of written this, things get frozen. I don't want to spoil anything, but it's absolutely amazing. And that is even before we're introduced to the main character, Glory, who I think is immediately going to be a huge hit across comic readers. She's going to be one of the characters of the year, I think. Don't you think, Tony?
Yeah, I think she's like, if Tank Girl was an action hero, that's kind of where I put her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's someone who, she used to have a history in sort of driving cars, and now she's like a mechanic. She, you know, does all her work herself. Her father's, like, literally, they can't afford to pay the medical bills, and he's on his last legs. So she has to do some untoward stuff to try and pay for it. I mean, that's your basic gist, and that's a very simple setup. You know, someone with a talent has to help a dying relative and get themselves in trouble. What goes on from there is absolutely phenomenal. This is comics at its finest, if you ask me. I mean, yeah. I thought it was going to be good. I had no... And obviously, there's cracking dialogue, because Rick Remender's known for brilliant dialogue and just pacing. But it's another example of he's got an artist that he just lets go. You know, when you've got an artist like this, there are pages that have absolutely no dialogue on. You know, dramatic scenes where someone throws up in a bathroom, which sounds funny when you put it like that, but the actual scene's quite heartfelt and, you know, quite sad in a sense.
Yeah.
But then it plays out. Glory gets set to do her sort of heist, and she's got this amazing sort of racing driver sort of costume, hasn't she?
You know,
which is totally comic booky, but still slightly real world, isn't it? It plays this nice fine line of being like a slightly over the top character, but still realist in a way.
And it's like a cool version. Do you remember in Herbie they'd wear those sort of costumes?
Yeah,
It's like a cool version of that almost. You know.
Yeah, yeah. And she has some dialogue with some locals. You know, she lives in a small town where everyone knows her. You know, and the stuff that she gets up to, and but then she gets caught. You see a little bit of her dirtbag ex husband. That's going to play more into it. I'm looking forward to see how that develops. And then it gets onto a car chase, having to draw. Now, obviously, I've been drawing cars for the Awesome Comics anthology, and I've been trying my hardest and doing whatever. And then you read something like this, and I just think, what's the point? Because this is, you know, this
great
is,
car chase, isn't it?
Oh, the really car good. Chase. I mean, we've mentioned it probably over the past half year. We've been talking about like the difficulties of car chases and stuff, and you know. It's phenomenal. A car chase around like these dirty mountain roads, having to dodge oncoming traffic. cop cars, you know, there's corrupt cops, and just epic. And the issue, I thought I had a handle on what this comic was going to be, and then the last page flips the switch completely.
Yeah,
and I do not know where we're going with this. That was one of those, right, okay, I'm in. I mean, I was already sold anyway, but then it does something a little bit different. And
for the car chase, how do they do the do they do any sound effects and stuff like that?
They do a couple, but it's not the sound of the car, sort of like engine.
Yeah.
It's more like the screech of the tires, or like,
you know, oncoming, like big bends and stuff.
Yeah, and it's oncoming.
Yeah,
traffic.
They do a couple, don't they? There's a couple of bits where they crash into things.
Yeah,
cool. And people's head hit the dashboard and stuff like that.
It's not on every panel, is it? You know, there's panels that's just cut two cars chasing after each other, and there's absolutely no.
There's a nice use of the sound effect honk.
Yeah, yeah,
like that. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so yeah, if you do like your lettering sound effects, they don't go too over the top with it, and it's just perfect.
Oh, best ones don't.
Yeah,
who's lettered that? Out of interest.
The second name is Wotton.
Russ Wotton. Cool.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
So he's using sort of white on a coloured background, if that makes sense. There's no outline to it.
Yeah,
it's kind of like a white screech across the coloured.
Yeah.
From the preview pages, you can see that the balloon style is a little different. He's got wiggly lines, which is always nice. A bit of red font.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
I'm intrigued to see how it goes on, but it looks lovely.
Yeah, it's a beautiful and fantastic first issue. As a lot of Image books normally are, aren't they? They hit you right out the gate. But the story was definitely, I'm totally on board for. I'm not sure how this is going. I'm not sure how it would be an ongoing, because I think at the moment.
Yeah. She's on a mission, isn't she, to do something? Yeah.
She's on a mission.
Interesting to see that the one of the variant covers is done by a friend of the show, Duncan Fogredo, as well. I've missed that one. That's the one I want to get. I love Duncan's work.
Yeah.
One of the best comic artists. He's awesome. Yeah.
And also, there's a letter in the back that sort of says, you know, this is just the beginning, and we'll give you a moment to let your pulse come down. It does get your heart rate going, this comic.
Yeah.
And apparently, it's just going to get, you know, bigger and better as it goes on.
Looks really cool.
I know, but Bengal, he's done some work from, I think it's a he, I presume it's a he.
I'm not sure, actually.
Apologies if it's not, but they've done work for Marvel and DC and some, I think, Overwatch comic books, you know, the video game Overwatch.
Okay.
Definitely did some artwork for that. And this seems to be, I think, Remender and Bengal are almost like on the same page, I think. They're just going for it. So Death or Glory is definitely it's a must read. I've been looking back on some of the comics that I've read so far this year. My best of year list is going to be a difficult one to pick, I think.
I hope
it continues at this pace, because already I know I'm probably going to get the issues like digital and probably go double dip on the trade. So, you know, Death or Glory from Image, that's mine, and I loved it. So there you go.
Cool. It's a good logo as well, man.
Yeah. Like, yeah, nice.
Looks fun.
Yeah, it looks like a book that's very nicely designed as well.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Who's next?
Shall I go next?
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
I've gone back to Europe Comics. I've read three books by them this week, but this one is The World Book of Records. It's written by Tonino Benequista, artist is Nicholas Barrell, and it's I think it's translated by Tom Imber. There you go, no relation that I know of. I read it on the Isneo app. It's 64 pages, £3.99. Got released in January this year, and it does that old trick of opening. I've seen this a couple of times. In fact, of two of the Europe books I've read this week, this happens in both of them, where the comic opens with someone, the alarm clock going off, and then waking up. It's kind of quite a common one, isn't it, for an opening of a book?
Yeah.
But I don't know, I kind of like that it gives it that sort of sense. You get a sense of the personality of the person by the way they get out of bed. I don't know, it's a weird one, isn't it? By how many times they press the snooze button, I suppose. So I kind of like
that. Do you think that you can tell a lot about a person by the way they get out of bed?
Yeah. Normally I get out of bed about 3 a.m. and go home. Do you know what I mean?
Boom.
Are you kicked out?
Yeah.
Yeah. They released me from the station, you know.
Yeah.
Give me my shoes back and they sent me home. The And he works for an office that deals with world records. And the cover gives that away because it's one of those sort of people standing against a sort of line background showing how tall they are. And there's a woman with extra long fingernails. There's a dog holding a frisbee. There's a midget. There's a man with who's covered in tattoos, you know. And there's this central character, which is Paul, sort of standing amongst it, looking a tiny bit lost in what's going on. And he goes into work and he opens his emails and you get this sort of montage of all the emails and pictures he's got. And one includes a load of schoolgirls cramming themselves into a smart car to get the record. Another one is an email of a man who's posted a snake and he claims it's still alive 14 days later at the other end of the postage and all this sort of thing. And he goes into the cafeteria and he sits with his colleagues and they sort of rib him a bit about how it's going. And he asks them if they can swap sort of sections. He says, oh, can I just do sort of, you know, the tallest mountain or the, you know, the most trees in a forest or something like that? And they said, no, you've got to continue on this because you're the sort of person who's good at breaking bad news to people. And he said he's sort of sick and tired of being the bad guy. He goes around telling people, look, I'm afraid your huge cabbage isn't the biggest one in the world. You know, it's 2 kilos under. And he goes and sees this one guy, and this guy has tried to write the longest letter in the world, handwritten letter, at 250 meters. And this is sort of touching letter to his dad, and he has to break to him, well, I think you find some girls in Japan wrote an 800 meter long one.
Oh, God.
So it sort of gives this, like, really interesting sort of backstory to this sort of ordinary guy. He's just this sort of quite a nice guy. And then by about page 16, you see he's sitting at his desk and he gets an email entitled Killer on the Loose. And a man who's in an effort to get into the book, he's going to go on a killing spree. And this is where the book suddenly takes a little bit of a turn. You think, oh, right, I see where this is going. So somebody wants to kill the most people or something like that, you know.
That's so a Paul dark turn in... I wasn't expecting.
But it's still got quite a light, it's still character driven. It's strange and good for it, I think. But he goes into the police station and they sort of brush him off and think it's a prank and say, no, don't worry about it. So he goes about his normal business. And of course, they do discover the body, you know. On the way, he meets a girl who wants to win the world record for twirling the most fire-lit tambourines or something, you know. And he goes and sees her, and she's not very good. And he says, look, why don't we just get to know each other? I think I've sort of stressed you out a bit. And he sort of picks this girl up in a not a sleazy way, in actually quite a nice way. And on the way, he's driving her home, and he's on the way there, he's bemoaning his own life and saying, look, I'm the most average person you'll meet. There's nothing special about me. You know, I go around sort of measuring people's special feats of, you know, skill and endurance and stuff, but I'm just like this ordinary guy. And they drive into a sort of police cars have stopped, and there's a guy who's about to jump off a block of flats, and he grabs the microphone off or the megaphone off the policeman and says, look, statistically, if you jump, there's a 7 out of 10 chance that you'll just break both legs and you'll be in a wheelchair for you. And he actually uses his skill as knowing all these facts to get the bloke to step away from the ledge. It's quite cool, you know. It's really, really nicely done. It's a sort of, I think I've written here, it's a sort of strangely touching serial killer story that is sort of really full of personality. At one point, he fears for his own life, so he rings his mate up, who's the world arm wrestling champion, who sort of owes him a favor, and he's his mate, and he comes and lives in his house and eats all his food, this sort of huge sort of bull of a man. And but it's got, like a lot of bande dessinée and European books, it treads that line between really sort of realistic art. So a lot of the scenery is like hugely realistic, you know, they show sort of cityscapes and blocks of flats and trains passing by windows and stuff like that. But him, he physically, he looks normal, but he's got a sort of caricatured face. So he's got sort of quite a long face. Yeah. And it gives it that sort of, I think they do that so well, French and, you know, Belgian books. It's got a lot of heart in it. There's some really sort of touching little moments and real sort of subtly done little commentaries on the nature of people who want to be famous and they want to be noticed and they want to be special and all this sort of thing. And he has to on occasion just talk to people and say, look, your dog can catch a frisbee, but just, he's just a nice dog, you know, calm down, what you're doing, you know, just live your life, you know. Really, really, really recommended. I was going to say, I was sort of trying to pick a hole in it and thinking what's good or what's bad about it. And I was thinking it seems a bit short. I think there's two edges to that. I think it seems a bit short because I enjoyed it so much. Yeah. And it's sort of, I raced through it. But also I think they tie up the serial killer thing, end of things, a little bit quickly. I think they could have done more with that. I do recommend you read it as well. You know, it's only $3.99.
Yeah.
It's really an immersive read. I found it a really one that you can sort of dive into, because the Isneo app doesn't have a guided view. So I was reading it as a page on. I've got an iPad to read it on. So I was reading it almost full size with a little bit of close up here and there. And the translation, I have to say, I find translation sometimes in these books a little bit stiff. And the nuance of stuff, I don't find they always get. But I've got to tell you, Tom Imber's done a great job on this one. Really, really good translation. So I read it on the Isneo app, and it was $3.99 from Europe Comics. And I immediately went over to their site and signed up to their newsletter, because I've read three of their books this week. I've also read The Mermaid Project, which is fucking amazing. And also started on Marina, which is the... it's a bit like Spartacus. It was very like it, in fact. I don't know what came first, because some of the storylines and sets are exactly the same. So I don't know which came first. It'd be interesting to see. But
interesting.
Definitely. We keep going back to them, and they're a really good company.
Yeah.
Really good stuff.
Nice.
That's my one.
I might have to get my hands on that.
Yeah, Mike. Very good.
Mike, what would you like to recommend?
I am, whenever possible, taking part in the Sparse Book Club on the Awesome Comics Talk page. Oh. And conveniently, because I wasn't reading it at that moment, they started one just this week that was for a new Marcosi release and Comic House of Retropunk.
I think it was Sam Webster started it, didn't he? I think
Good egg. I just conveniently managed to spot it as soon as I mentioned it, so I jumped on board knowing that I was doing this. Because I don't get to read as much comics as I'd like to due to working too much, which is a good thing. I'm not complaining, but I'd like to read more comics. Sorry, stuff's falling over behind me. So Retropunk is a Marcosia book that's now on Comic House. The synopsis is it's quite a short one. Beneath the steel and neon glow of Pacific City, a low rent bounty hunter just got a job offer, a small fortune offered for a simple bodyguard position. But no job called simple ever is, especially in a world of robotic partners, powerful mega corporations, pop idols, and cyber ninja assassins. Yes. And
sold.
It's pretty good. The cover's quite funky as well. It's quite sort of artsy, and it's sort of like three colors, and it caught my eye quite a nice little design cover. But internally, like, it's not something I would normally go for at all. So I'm quite glad they sort of forced under my nose in that sense. It's quite mangery.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Is it mangery?
Yeah, and it's clearly a translation.
Okay.
Which is, so there are some negatives to it that I'm struggling with. So initially the first few pages, it took me a while to get used to the grey tone pages. I found I couldn't see bits of the page. I couldn't see where the characters were and stuff. Like, it was either I got used to it or they just sort of got into their stride at the beginning of the book within a couple of pages. But I wasn't finding that much of an issue as I got in. I'm only about 30 pages in of a 140-page book. It's it was quick reading at the time, but I didn't get a chance to read any further today. But I was really enjoying it by the end of it. The characters seem fun. The main character's a female bounty hunter, and she's got a robot sidekick. I'm calling him a sidekick. I'm assuming he's a sidekick. Rather than the other way around, but he's got some funny turns of phrase, which made me chuckle out loud quite a few times. The lettering is kind of awkward in the sense that it's translated, so there's often quite a lot of space in the balloons and stuff, and awkward shapes where they don't match up what's going on. But that's just from it being a translation. You sometimes get that where they haven't got the original unlettered artwork. They've just gone over the old balloons, because you can fill in the white of the balloons, obviously, and just carry on, rather than you can't make up the artwork below it if you haven't got the artwork there already. So it's not too jarring. It's outside of my comfort zone, to put it that way, in terms of reading it. But it's a thoroughly good read. I'm really enjoying it. I like the banter between the two characters, and the main story is just sort of started getting going with this pop idol that's sort of shown up needing a bodyguarding job from her old bodyguard, I think it is, which is slightly ironic. But it's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to having finishing off and then feeding back with the guys in the group, because it's I like, a bit like you guys, enjoyed doing this. So this whole podcast, in the sense that you'd started reading loads of books you wouldn't normally read. On a small scale, this book club is doing that for me on the few times I've been able to actually partake in it. So,
nice one. That's good. Good to hear, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good little group. So I quite enjoy going on there. And obviously with my lettering thoughts, I hopefully can feedback on different ways to different people and stuff. So I think there's so many different artists and letterers and writers and and just readers on that group that you get a really mixed kind of feedback and sort of review of the book. So yeah, it should be good.
Cool. Oh, that's nice.
Nice one. Oh, yeah, it's good to hear.
Sorry.
That's good to hear, man. Yeah.
Oh, I feel like we've achieved something starting that group. Dan, do you have a recommendation?
It's going to be relatively brief, but for this week, I've been working on a cover for issue 2 of Delta Dawn from Corgi Press, which focuses on a young team of superhero ladies who are being coached by a character called Paragon. I think I've talked about this comic before called Supermum, Our Supermum.
Yes.
And it's about superhero lady. She's got two young children, and it's set a couple of years after that series is finished, and she's sort of heading up a team of young girls and training them how to be superheroes. It's a fun little story. You can read it at corgipress.com. Scott's been writing comics for years and years and years. And
so it's the Supermum character who's actually sort of teaching a new team?
Yeah.
That's cool. I like that.
Four or five new characters, and she's sort of taking them under her wing and bringing in the cast and crew of Our Supermum and training them how to do their thing.
Was it already a expanded universe, or is that a new thing?
Oh no, yes, yeah, it's already. I'm trying to think how many comics Our Supermum got up to, how many issues, but
is this the first one that strays into a new title?
Yes, the Delta Dawn. It's just started issue 2.
Cool.
How many issues? I think there's about 16 titles of 16 comics of Our Supermum. So, it's all ready to go. Give it a check it out.
It's Mothering Sunday in America. There you go. So it's a good day to say.
Yes.
Happy Mother's Day.
Totally intentional tie-in.
Thanks for pointing out. All class.
Yeah. I won't put it past you, Dan. I won't put it past you. So there you go. What a fantastic bunch of comic books this week for you all to go and check out. And what a fantastic show.
And
we hope. Yeah, you never know. People might have learned something from what we talked about, as well as the ridiculous nonsense.
It's one of those subjects that you would probably, by having people to talk to, you get more kind of questions. Or if you start seeing stuff, it's a weird one to just ask people questions for. I wouldn't know what to ask people, so I feel like there was a whole world of lettering that we could have delved into that we probably didn't get a chance to. But I think
we will revisit the topic.
You don't want to give away the magic. Everyone will be doing it.
No,
you might.
Yeah.
Well, swings and roundabouts to that. I get to read more comics because I can actually get past the lettering if it's better.
True.
Other people vying for business, but there's I get to read more comics. That should be a good thing.
It's the snake that eats its own tail. Much like this show. Sure. Now we hope you enjoyed this episode and maybe learned something from it, or who knows, maybe I said something insanely wrong like I normally do on a weekly basis. But if you want to get in touch with us, there's several different ways you can do it. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. likewise, we've got tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Thank you for all your letters for the letters column of our comic, by the way. We very much appreciated it. Got some crack
ones.
Most of them are insulting.
People just like doing it. Don't know why. Yeah. But people are generally nicer to us on Twitter. At The Awesome Pod is where you can follow us on Twitter, where we announce the next guests or stuff coming up. Sometimes we'll have a Kickstarter call out every Thursday. So if you're one of the billions of people that has a Kickstarter campaign for comics, get in touch every Thursday with us, and we'll retweet and spread the word. We probably won't do it anyone else, because we're being quite mercenary about this. That's where you can find us on Twitter. On Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, where you can like our page. And if you want to get involved in the conversation, as Mike said a few times, go to Awesome Comics Talk, which is the group on Facebook, because it's not a place where people are shilling or selling or whatever. It's people who are talking about comics, whether it's making, like going to conventions, and it's definitely conversation that's getting going. And it's also got that brilliant book club, which has started back up. So definitely get involved, because I think I'm going to read Retropunk after that.
Yeah, me too.
Sounds bloody awesome.
It was quite a quick read once I got going, so I think you could fly through if you're better at reading manga comics than I am, then I think you could fly through it in half an hour easy.
Well, I haven't read that many. So I'm only just I'm dipping my toe into the manga. Oh.
Dip our toes together, mate.
Let's talk off air. Anyway, thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, go on, subscribe. Go on, you know you want to. And leave us a nice review. We haven't had a review for a bit.
And, no.
Dan and Tony are desperately needy.
Yeah, we are.
And you need an affirmation, don't you?
All the time.
Yeah, all the time.
All the time. So be nice to us and leave a nice review and spread the word. And if you listen to us on any of the networks, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod Time Beavers.
Then. And if you listen to us on the Time Beavers Network, thank you very, very much. it threw me this week. It always throws me.
It's two random words with the word pod in front.
Yeah. He uses the word beaver whenever he can.
It's not a comic.
Hey?
Time Beavers is a comic by Tim Truman. It's a graphic novel.
Oh.
It's actually not bad. I like Tim Truman. I'm trying to goad him into coming on the pod.
Well, that's saying it like him helps.
Yeah.
Goad him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Goad him.
Ask him, goad him.
Yeah, yeah. Tim, if you're listening to this show,
we'd love to have you on.
We'd love to have you on to talk about your beavers.
Your beavers.
He's got time.
Yeah.
Back in time with your beaver.
Oh, God. Anyway, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Ezohyz, or neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk. There's, I think, four or five things gone up in the last week. So, yeah, some interesting stuff.
Nice.
There you go. Daniel? Do say so myself.
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Nice. And it's coming back soon. Oh,
yes. Next month.
That was a creepy noise.
Oh. Sorry, I don't know what's happening to me. It's too late on a Sunday night.
Doubled up.
Anyway, you'll be lucky. You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. Find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. And Mike Stock, thank you for joining us this week. Where can people find Mike. You online, etc.?
I have a website, michaelstock.co.uk. I'm on Twitter at Sheriff Stocky. And I've got a Facebook page. It was a new thing that I was told to get by my girlfriend, and it seems to be going all right. But that is comic book lettering on all one word.
Oh, okay.
On Facebook. No one else had it, so snatched it up.
Nice. You did well there, son.
Mm. Winning. I did it on, I think it was PayPal or something as well. You can do these privatized sort of URLs, and no one had comic book lettering on it or lettering, so I snatched up one there as well.
Oh, so nice.
Winning. He's a mercenary, but a good lad.
Yeah.
So, thank you for listening, everyone. Hope you go forth and read loads of comic books. It's episode 150 next week. We're still
special.
We're still figuring
out. Is there
out
someone at the door?
Oh, don't start that. but for now, you've just had 2 hours of sexy comic talk. So go forth, read loads of comic books, and from Dan, Tony, Mike, and myself, have a brilliant week. And as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.
Although Doctor Screw was actually quite a good series.
You fucking love that, don't you?
The Doctor Who, Doctor Screw. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Series. So they actually made a episodical.
It was a box set, yeah.
Pardon the pun.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. We haven't even started the fucking show yet. Jesus.
There was one thing I wanted to test, actually, is my mute button. Because, you know, you guys.
Yeah, sure.
What, are you going to mute us or yourself?
Me.
Okay.
Tony's an arsehole.
Yeah, that worked fine. That's fine, Mike. Yeah. Fucking funny. Yeah. you practice that one. Come on, that was good. I did.
No, I actually did practice it. That was just that one. All
right. That's fucking gold.
Randy, this could go many ways, I think.
you go many ways.
Fucking hell. Already.
That was a good one, wasn't it?
Yeah, don't encourage it.
That was good.
And your mum goes many ways.
Enough. Hello, and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode... back. It was the mum joke. That's what got me. Right.
My mum got you. That's all.